Picture a 6'7", 260-pound man violently punching himself in the face on a crowded city street. Now imagine that same man works in a library, the supposed temple of silence, where his involuntary screams shatter the quiet multiple times a day. This isn't fiction. This is Josh Honegarn's reality, a man whose body has been at war with itself since childhood, yet who found his calling surrounded by books and whispers. His journey reveals something profound. Sometimes our greatest weaknesses become the crucible for discovering unimaginable strength. Between the library stacks and the weight room, between faith and doubt, between despair and hope, lies a story about what it means to fight for control of your own body, and whether control is even the right goal. Tourette's syndrome feels like needing to sneeze, except the sneeze never quite comes, and the urge never quite leaves. There's an itch building in whatever body part wants to tick. Your eyes if you need to blink, your shoulders if they want to jerk, your throat if a sound demands release. You could hold it in, theoretically, but there's no relief in stifling it. The pressure just builds and intensifies, creating a mounting tension that becomes unbearable. The suppression doesn't make the urge disappear, it simply postpones the inevitable. You must release a specific intensity of tics each day, either as many small movements scattered throughout your waking hours, or one explosive burst when you're finally alone, behind closed doors, where no one can witness the accumulated pressure finally finding release. Josh discovered this truth at 6 during a Thanksgiving play, cast as a tree when he desperately wanted to be Wilbur the Pig. His face began contorting with involuntary movements that worsened throughout the performance, each tick feeding the next in an escalating cycle. He wasn't even aware of these tics until his concerned parents demonstrated what he'd been doing, curling his upper lip upward to touch his nose, blinking rapidly in irregular bursts, jerking his head like a turtle stretching its neck from its shell. The movements had felt natural to him in the moment, just his body doing what it needed to do. When his mother offered to buy him a book if he could stop for 5 minutes, he couldn't last even one. The seconds ticked by with excruciating slowness as the pressure mounted. "It feels weird if I don't do it," he explained. The most honest description of Tourette's you'll ever hear, capturing in simple childhood language what neurologists struggle to articulate in technical terms. His father reframed the diagnosis with characteristic creativity, comparing Josh to sharks that must keep moving to breathe. "Sharks are the toughest things ever. A shark can punch the whole world in the face and then just swim away." This metaphor would prove more apt than anyone realized, transforming a medical diagnosis into an identity of strength rather than weakness. Josh named his Tourette's Misty, short for Miss T, treating it as a separate being, a parasite he was in relationship with rather than something that defined his entire existence. This wasn't denial or childhood fantasy. It was survival strategy born of necessity. When something controls your body against your will, personifying it creates psychological distance, a tiny space where you still exist independently, where Josh could remain Josh, even when Misty was making his body move in ways he didn't choose. At 19, Josh faced the expectation confronting every Mormon boy, serving a 2-year mission. For someone whose body betrayed him constantly, this felt like volunteering for torture. The prospect of 2 years spent knocking on doors, walking endless miles, and maintaining a rigid schedule seemed designed to amplify every physical vulnerability he possessed. He imagined himself collapsing on strangers' doorsteps, vomiting in public bathrooms, unable to explain why his body simply wouldn't cooperate. The mission structure allowed no accommodation for weakness. Missionaries rose at 6:30 a.m. regardless of how little sleep they'd managed, walked prescribed routes regardless of physical capacity, and maintained cheerful persistence regardless of how their bodies screamed for rest. But avoiding a mission would trigger gossip and disapproval throughout his tight-knit community. Worthy young men served, unworthy ones stayed home. This binary judgment left no room for nuance, no space to acknowledge that physical limitations might be legitimate reasons for staying behind. The social pressure was immense. Families whispered about boys who didn't serve, questioning their faith, their character, their worthiness. Josh had witnessed it firsthand, the subtle exclusion of returned missionaries from young men who'd stayed behind, the way mothers spoke in hushed tones about so-and-so's son who couldn't quite make it work, the unspoken assumption that physical frailty revealed spiritual weakness. In his community, your mission defined your marriageability, your social standing, your credibility as a faithful member. One night in Idaho, overwhelmed by the weight of this expectation and terrified of what lay ahead, Josh made his decision. He would go, despite knowing his body might not survive the demands. The choice wasn't really about faith or devotion. It was about avoiding the shame of being labeled unworthy, about protecting his family from embarrassment, about proving something to a community that measured spiritual commitment in physical sacrifice. He was volunteering for what he suspected might break him completely, not because God called him, but because the alternative, staying home and facing a lifetime of whispered doubts about his character, seemed even worse.